Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This session of the radio show shares my conversation with Peter Carlson. Peter, a Franklin resident, is exploring his interest in chocolates and looking to bring that old school taste to the market. We talk about his Franklin story, how his interest in chocolates has led to crafting some bean-to-bar chocolate bars for right old school chocolate. His bars generally use only two ingredients, the nibs, minus the husk, and unrefined sugar. We discuss how the taste variations can be more than subtle. The taste honors the bean and not what you get from the standard big bar chocolates. The recording runs about 16 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Peter outdoors on the town common. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, 102.9 on the Franklin area dial, and anywhere on the internet at WFPR.FM. Today, we're outside on the town common to talk with Peter Carlson of Right Old School Chocolates. Peter, thank you for taking time and welcome.
Well, I appreciate this, Steve. It's an opportunity that I'm looking forward to sharing my story a little bit with you and others, and thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Absolutely. So let's start with kind of the Franklin story. You've been in Franklin for some time or recent, or what is your story on that front?
Yeah, I think that some of the old-time Franklin folks may consider us a new-timer, a newcomer. Yeah,
unless we're born here, we're newcomers, period. I understand that and respect that.
Yeah, we've moved in here in 86, so we've been here quite a few years.
Yeah.
And our kids played a lot of soccer here in the youth program, and I did a lot of coaching and basketball and all, and then the kids went to Whitingsville Christian School. So we've had quite a bit of time in this town and enjoyed it. Our church is here, and it's a good town, I think.
It is. We came here in 96, so you beat us by a few years, but similar story otherwise. The girls went through, not soccer, but they had started swimming, and the high school didn't have a swim team, so they switched to track and then enjoyed track, and they played musical instruments and one sang, so they were in the chorus in the high school program, and now they're out and about and doing other things, so it's all good.
Yes, yeah. My daughter moved out to San Francisco for a while, and I imagine we'll come back to that point a little bit later, because she was a force in getting me started in the chocolate business.
And she was, yes. Yeah. So right old school chocolates.
Right.
So chocolate is not just any chocolate. Chocolate is a bunch of things, and yours is specific, and I think the old school piece is kind of key, but tell us that story on what you're trying to do with old school chocolates.
So let me tell you how I got involved with chocolate. It's no surprise I like chocolate. I've been eating chocolate all my life.
You're not alone in that, yeah. Which I think will entice some of the listeners as well. Oh, chocolate, what's this about?
Yeah, I started making cakes when I was in third grade. My mother would come home from work and frost them and all, and we had a share of chocolate that time too. But Debbie and I were married, and after we had kids and all, and became a little bit more of interest in what kind of chocolate to have. So there is the big manufacturers of chocolate that if you go down the label and you see all the ingredients there, you notice there's quite a few ingredients in those chocolates, particularly if you go in the milk chocolate side of things.
Right.
What I make is dark chocolate, and I make it with two ingredients. And the two ingredients are the cocoa butter and, well, it's the cocoa nibs, the part of the nut or the bean of the chocolate that is the meat of the nut. Yeah.
The nut.
So the husks are blown away or sucked away, and that's the outer shell of the bean. So what I do is I buy the bean and take it from bean all the way to a bar. I don't add any other ingredients except for unrefined sugar. So it's just the cocoa nibs and the sugar that make up the chocolate. And this all came about because my daughter in San Francisco would bring me to the chocolate places because of my affinity for chocolate. Mm-hmm. So we would go, first she gave me a gift of going to a tour on Cho chocolate, which is a nice chocolate.
Yep.
And then she brought me to a dandelion chocolate. And then I said, let's go back to Dandelion Chocolate about every time I was there. So they actually, Dandelion wrote a book to describe what their growth has been and what their process is and what they had done to start up.
Okay.
Beth and Jordan, Beth's husband Jordan, they both gave me a book in my 64th birthday. Within 3 weeks, I was out and we had a little trip planned with them, and I took 4 bars of Bean to Bar chocolate with me out to Hawaii to surf with them. So that was the initial 4 bars that we made. So my story is that when she gave me that book, I kind of devoured it. And
literally devoured it. But then made something from it.
Right. Bought all the equipment, invested really small scale things, but mm-hmm. invested about $1,000 in the equipment part and the ingredients. And,
right.
And then made a few bars. And getting the bars to the right consistency at the end gave me a bit of a challenge. So that process of crystallizing it correctly is called tempering.
Okay.
And so one of my initial thoughts for the name of the company could have been Temper Tantrums.
Temper Tantrums.
But old school bright chocolate. Bright old school chocolate is the name that I landed on because Wright is my middle name, and my son and my daughter and son-in-law both have some design.
Artistic.
Well, yeah, they have degrees in design. And they liked my signature, and I had to write my name like 40 times when I was in Hawaii. And they zeroed in my W of the initial of Wright, my middle name, and made it into a logo that has served me. It's a design that really seems to attract people to the product.
Well, and having seen it just briefly myself, Wright has kind of the pun, so it's Wright, R-I-G-H-T.
Yes.
And you've got the W in front of it for the name aspect, so it plays well that way.
Sure. Yeah. So the chocolate old school part is just that I wanted to be true to traditional things, not be gimmicky of how to make chocolate. Just wanted to keep the ingredients very simple. Didn't want to use even refined sugar. I just wanted to stay with unrefined sugar and use just the nibs. So I have sampled about 23 different farms of beans across over the world. The beans come as far north as Hawaii and as far south as Madagascar. So it's pretty much the same climate that coffee grows in.
Okay.
It's plus minus 20 degrees latitude.
Yeah, that's where it's optimal from a climate perspective.
Right.
Yeah.
But each soil, each growing condition, each fermentation process that's done at the farms is a little bit different. And the flavors that are put on my labels are the nuances that come from those environments.
So that's where the variations come from. It's bean specific and not anything that you're doing,
right.
Whatever. Because
right.
You only have the 2 ingredients, the bean and then the sugar anyway.
That's it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I take the beans and I roast them. I put them through a winnowing process, which crunches them up, and then I'm able to separate out the nibs from the husk by a vacuum and a free fall process. And then I go into a couple of processes to refine sugar down and the nibs down to a size that's really smooth on the tongue and tastes nice. So. It's not the grittiness of a Taza, but it's a more silkiness of another kind of
mm-hmm.
chocolate.
Yeah. An interesting factor that it's just the nib that makes the chocolate. And you started mentioning kind of the butter piece. That would be a separate processing, and you're not doing that part. You're just working with the nature of the bean itself, the husk aside.
The bean has that meaty part is the nib.
Mm-hmm.
The nib has in it the cocoa butter and the cocoa powder that many companies will try to press out and yield and maximize their profits in a different way.
Okay.
So the butter can go off and be sold to the cosmetic industry.
Okay.
And to keep the consistency right for manufacturing and processing of the chocolate, then some kind of oil needs to be put back in there. So many of the bars that you see that are being sold will have palm oil or vegetable oil being added, or cocoa oil, coconut oil in there to give it some ease of manufacturing.
So effectively substituting a cheaper oil, since they've already extracted the butter, that comes with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. And it's all economically driven.
Sure. Yeah.
But the consumer misses some nuances if in the process.
Yeah, and that's the economic world. Certainly, when you get a Mars bar, you know what you're getting. The consistency of the Mars bar, every Mars bar is effectively going to be the same. Whereas by going to the nib and the meat of the bean, and then from the different sources you have, you've got the variations. And they're relatively subtle variations, but there are variations in the chocolates.
Yeah, you say subtle. I've been tasting quite a few, and some of them are not so subtle.
Not so subtle. I've only had the one sample so far, so I shouldn't really say too much in terms of subtle.
The Madagascar bean has an extremely fruity taste.
Okay.
There's a Fiji bean that can be almost a smooth caramel taste.
Okay.
I work with Ecuador quite a bit. It has a real fudgy, a full body taste to it. You tried the Colombian Tumaco farm, which is seems to be a sweet spot for the people who are tasting it.
Okay.
And I have no shortage of people who want to taste it, that's for sure.
Well, that's a good thing. That's a good indication in terms of kind of proving the concept. Is there a market, and is the market something that you can at least be, sustainable at, whatever your sustainable definition is?
Right. Before we started talking, I've told you that I'm not here to really make a lot of money, but I certainly won't shy away from profit if it comes in. What I'm trying to do is give people the kind of experience that I know that can be had by making chocolate and tasting something that has all those blends of the 600 ingredients or so that are in chocolates,
mm-hmm.
To come out and really surprise your tongue with a taste that you won't get with the big bar chocolates, because they tend to over roast. They tend to use a variety of bean that's not really robust for the environment, robust for the bugs or anything that might infest it.
Right.
So it's a hardy variety that most of the big manufacturers use, but it's not the most tasteful.
Yeah. At least on the one sample, it was rather tasty.
Good. The different kinds of beans do have a lot of different flavors, but the way I impact that flavor is by the amount of roasting I do and the amount of refinement I do and what kind of sugar I add and when I add the sugar to the process. So all those things contribute to trying to keep the flavor high and the smoothness really silky.
Right, and then use the sugar effectively to accent and balance the flavor taste, as opposed to in some chocolates you can taste the sugar, but that's not what you're trying to do.
I'm not trying to do that on the dark chocolate I make.
Right.
Actually, my wife doesn't like dark chocolates, so I actually do make some what would traditionally be called a white chocolate, but
white
mine
chocolate.
Is a golden
okay.
chocolate yep. because my sugar is not refined.
Okay.
So you get a gold color on it, and there's a lot of sugar in that one.
Yeah.
So the white chocolate is kind of interesting in that the white chocolate only uses cocoa butter. It doesn't use any of the cocoa nibs that I have.
Okay.
I just buy cocoa butter and then have to add on the ingredients to get that the whole product. So that one's not a two ingredient product.
No, it sounds like it's got a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because you're not starting. You're starting with a part of what you would start with the bean.
Right.
Yeah.
So some white chocolate doesn't even have cocoa butter in it, so I don't even know why they call it chocolate.
We can get into another definitional question, but there's FDA and other regulations, and internationally I think there's some disputes from time to time around what's acceptable and what's not. Certainly the Swiss have a long tradition of chocolates, and the Germans as well, so yeah.
There are definitely different definitions of what chocolate is in different countries.
Right.
It's interesting. We don't have that same kind of regulation here.
Yeah. Indeed. Well, this has been entertaining for sure, and also to a certain extent mouth-watering. I'm almost looking for a taste. Okay, how can we should come back another time and kind of do a taste test, at least audibly, to see, oh, this is what it looks like, this is what it tastes like, and have people just, you know, imagine that.
Well, people have contacted me about doing some tastings of the chocolate, like Franklin Liquors and La Cantina.
Okay.
They've had samples and they want to do the same thing, but they can have their palates get pleased with both the chocolate and some other beverage.
Sure, a little beverage of choice. Yep. Absolutely, yeah. So it's a good complimentary in some cases.
Yeah, Bob of La Cantina has been very helpful in trying to help me navigate through the town and help me get to where I think there may be a way of getting some marketing.
Yes. Yeah, that'll be the next step for sure. Yeah. Well, this has been good. Thank you for taking time. For the listeners, we will include in the show notes the link to your website and information that way so they can follow the story. And as you eventually have a place, we'll include that as well. It's one of the things with the web. We can always add a link to it and
great.
Then it'll flow through.
Yep. And my website will have some links on it too to help people know where things that blend well with the chocolate and other things.
Pairings, tastings, things of that sort.
Yep.
Yes. Good.
Thank you, Stephen.
Excellent. Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.